Talking with TD.
Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee.
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Yes, yes, you are now talking with TD. You know what time it is. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. We got a lot to get into, a lot to talk about. We got Matt Verderam of Sports Illustrated, SI Now, coming on the show to talk that LeJarius Sneed talk. You know the rumors are abounding to the fullest in regards to the acquisition of that corner. So we'll get into that. That's something obviously the Titans have been tied to. We'll talk that. The biggest news free agent-wise has been the signing of Calvin Ridley. We haven't gotten a chance to talk to forever Titans receiver Chris Sanders about that, so we'll get into that as well, and many, many more. Got David James over here.
Yes, sir.
Yo, making it happen. And look, let's start off with this, okay? I think this coaching staff, and it's really interesting how it impacted free agency. And you'll say, well, TD, what do you mean the coaching staff impacted free agency? Well, I think this is how it impacted free agency. You have guys who wanted to sign with this team because the coach is on this new staff. And I think it's always good to have a draw, right? It's always good to have something that makes players want to play in your system, in your scheme. But here's the thing. Nobody fully knows the scheme. All they know is some of the characteristics and traits. And we'll start off with Kenneth Murray. And I think, you know, when you look at Kenneth Murray and how he is, and this is something I talked to Jared Stillman about this off the air a lot. You know, we text about it in this PFF thing. And I said, look, man, you got to come off it. You know, and I understand no one could watch every single game and all of that. That's true. But I'm not a believer in letting someone else dictate my opinion of a player. I'd rather watch said player and form an opinion that way. So PFF ratings for me, yeah, it's not going to do it. And frankly, for those in the NFL, it doesn't do it. I'll say it over and over again. Folks in the NFL, they use PFF for the grunt work, right? How many times did Calvin Ridley line up in the slot? And this is another good example of why you can't just solely rely on PFF. How many times did Harold Landry line up as a stand-up edge backer as opposed to hand in the dirt pass rusher? Those are the types of things that the league relies on Pro Football Focus for. The stuff that they used to pay somebody $13,000 a year to do. Much easier to just get a subscription and call it a day. But I digress. Let's continue to talk about this Kenneth Murray situation. And the reason why I brought PFF up is because, you know, Jared, every time he brings up Kenneth Murray, he's, oh, well, PFF says he stinks. Okay. Here's a good example of a good analogy to that situation, right? So, David, if I told you to go out and eat, right? Mm-hmm. If I told you to eat a steak, you know, and I said, I want you to use the fork as the knife and the knife as the fork, would the results come out too well for you?
No, not at all.
Exactly. So I know you're like, well, what are you talking about? Well, here's what I'm talking about. When you use a tool in the way that it's supposed to be used, you have a good shot at getting the right result. Kenneth Murray is not a read and react type of player. He's a guy where you say, I know you got that Rottweiler in you. Go ahead and attack. That's what you do. So naturally, his rating in that Chargers offense, or excuse me, defense under Brandon Staley is not going to be good because you're taking a knife and you're using it as a fork. Now, in this scheme, and I've said it before, Denard Wilson, his background comes from guys that get after it, aggressive guys. Todd Bowles, one of the Bucks blitz a lot, right? Greg Williams, we don't even got to talk about it. You know what he does. So when you have that aggressive attacking mindset, guess what will work in it? An aggressive, attacking, athletic football player. And then on top of that, you have a coach in Frank Bush. And I was curious for Kenneth Murray's perspective, like, how do you like getting a chance to work with a guy that's been in it for a while? Here's Kenneth Murray at his intro press conference.
Absolutely. You know, I think those things, my attributes, definitely benefit from being on an attacking, you know, fast defense, just flying around. I think that's what I do best. And so, you know, I'm really looking forward to that. You know, had a great conversation with the coach this morning, and really excited, looking forward to coming here, getting out there, and just, you know, creating a great culture. And playing some really, really good defense.
And how about working with, you know, an OG in the linebacker game like Frank Bush, you know, having him as a coach?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he definitely is an OG. You know, been learning a little bit about him. You know, I had a chance to sit down and talk to him this morning. And so, you know, he's been, you know, a guy that's super energetic. And, you know, I'm looking forward to definitely getting in the room, you know, getting after it, seeing, you know, what I need to work on to get better, and just becoming the best version of myself.
So you have that right there. But then you have another defensive player, and I mentioned Denard Wilson, right, and his background and his approach to things. And you have another defensive player, and you ready? You ready? You ready?
I'm ready. I'm ready.
Chidobe Awuzie.
Chido.
Or they call him Chido. But you have a corner who they signed, and he's a guy that, you know, is an aggressive, physical corner. You see a theme coming here? And another theme that's coming here is he also, it's not in this quote, but he also said that he wants to build a culture. That's what you want, like your foundational pieces, to have that desire. But here's Awuzie on the impact that Denard Wilson had. And I almost a bad moment at the end of here, but check it out.
DB coach, DB background, as a coordinator, we've spoken briefly already today too. I'm just really excited to get to work with him, someone who has a lot of experience in the game, you know, and the staff that, you know, is here as well, the defensive staff, as well as the offensive staff, but mainly the defensive staff I've met today. You know, everybody's just, I can just see it in their eyes, and you know, they're ready to get things rolling, so it's giving me a lot of juice.
You mentioned the offensive staff. You mentioned the offensive staff. How early did Brian Callahan, you know, reach out to you in this process?
When it was legal.
That one got me. It's funny. You could tell Chidobe is a chess player. You know, that was very strategic in making sure he answered it that way. I wasn't trying to get them. What I was getting across was like how early, you know, once obviously it was legal, but like once the contact could be made, how early did Callahan, you know, get on the phone? I was curious if, okay, was that the closing deal? Like you look at Calvin Ridley, Rand Carthon getting on the phone and talking to him. You know, and man to man, you know what I mean? That is what it sealed the deal. And I was curious if Callahan did it in that case. So, yeah, but it was funny. But I do like what he said about the DB background. And that is something that is going to attract some players to sign. Now, the most obvious one is Bill Callahan. And, I mean, if I'm an offensive lineman, like, I want to play for him. You know what I mean? Jeff Stoutland, like those are the top guys offensive line-wise in the league. Here's Lloyd Cushenberry, who I think is going to unlock so many things for this offensive line. Here's Lloyd Cushenberry on the Callahan effect.
Good factor of Bill Callahan. His resume speaks for itself. Coached a lot of great guys. Heard a lot of great things about him. And I think it's a good opportunity for me to continue to grow my game and take that next step as a player.
He went on to talk a little bit about the detail, and he said that detail, just in that quick conversation they had, how similar that was to Mike Munchak. You know, he said that was a similarity that he found in those two coaches. And it's funny, Rand Carthon, he spoke at one of his pressers, and he talked about how like Bill Callahan talking to him and hearing him talk offensive line. He said they all looked at each other and was like, man, we don't know anything about it. And it's always good to have a professor like that in the locker room or in the coaching staff, rather. Another one, not necessarily because of the coaching. Well, you can say that because Nick Holes worked with him in Jacksonville, Calvin Ridley. I think this signing, like this changes a lot. So we're going to round out just a couple of things from the free agent group with Michael Irving talking about Calvin Ridley. Now, mind you, they're from the same part of Florida, if I'm not mistaken. And I think, you know, there's obviously history there. But he says some really interesting things about Ridley. And I think these are some things that should actually stick and really be considered when you're talking about this contract, which, by the way, $50 million guaranteed for Calvin Ridley. You got Jerry Jeudy, you know, $41 million guaranteed. And look, everybody, get your money. I'm not against that. But I think, you know, you take the Jerry Jeudy deal and you look at that, and that makes the Calvin Ridley deal so much more palatable. You know, and I think that's something to be noted. Ironically, both Alabama guys. But here's Michael Irvin on Calvin Ridley.
When you watch this dude practice, and remember now, Tennessee got a coach that knows him very well, that brought him over there. You watch him practice, you watch his skill set, you say, oh, my God, this is the next great thing in the NFL. Doug Peterson thought he was going to be the next great thing for Jacksonville. I guarantee you they didn't want to lose him. That's how the number got up to where it is, because they didn't want to lose him. He has that raw talent, and he has such a work ethic. Coaches fall in love with him. But in 2020, he had 1,300 yards. So he has it. He just hasn't consistently dealt with it and put it up. He had 1,016 last year. But boy, his physical skill set, yeah, he can do all of that.
So right there, I mean, as Michael Irvin said, he's done it before, and I think it's just a matter of getting him more back in the swing of things, another year with it, and his work ethic. And if you have a question about that, there are videos of him going, you know, full. You look at some of the videos of he and Julio Jones with the Falcons. There was one that posted recently, and it showed the way that they were getting at it and the stuff that they did in practice back when he was in Atlanta. I don't think there should be any questions about his work ethic. He definitely gets it. He's working out with Zay Flowers, too. You see videos of that also. But let's spin it forward to some of the things, because we highlighted some really good things about free agency. But look, man, like, there's some bad, too. Like, this team still doesn't have a left tackle. Andrews Pete had came to visit. He came left without a contract. Obviously, you know, you look at some of the options. Jalen Duncan, he gave up 16 sacks last year, and that's according to True Media, which is what the metrics that ESPN uses. Side note, sacks, like, it's going to be different, you know, with different outlets. But the one that we use, it was 16 sacks. But still, like, it's too many. You know what I mean? Obviously, a rookie, a fifth-round pick, there's still development that has to happen. Could he be at an option at left tackle? I don't know. Nicholas Petit-Ferrar, I don't know. You know, and then you flip it to the right side, and they still have needs on the right side. You got Dylan Raiens and Petit-Ferrar, who will probably compete for that. But what happens if they get a later, like, what happens if they move back in the draft and they get J.C. Latham? And they put him at right, and then you flip Raiens to left. Raiens is the book on him has always been that he's more comfortable working on the left side than the right side. I don't know. It's going to be interesting watching all that play out. Obviously, the magical thing would be at 7, Joe Alt is there, and we'll see how the draft pans out. But the fact of the matter is they're not going to be able to secure it via free agency, that's for sure. So that's a big elephant that's in the room that they're going to have to figure out. Inside linebacker is another one. I did say that Kenneth Murray, I think, is really good in this defense, but I think you got to pair a high awareness and athletic cover type of linebacker with Kenneth Murray. Here's the thing. I really would have thought Jerome Baker would have been perfect for them. Now, I don't know the details of the contracts or what happened with the visit, why it didn't get done, but that is an area that they're going to have to address. I'm not really too keen on any of the options that they have in free agency left over. Obviously, Jack Gibbons is a very alert and aware guy, but he's not the most athletic. Otis Reese is very athletic. He is an option, but I don't know that I would, especially converting from a safety. Like, I don't know that I would put him in the green dot helmet situation. But I tell you one guy that I would, and that's Peyton Wilson out of NC State. That's a linebacker that I really like. And I talked to him about being the quarterback of the defense and those types of things. We actually played that on here a couple weeks ago, coming out of the combine. And former wrestler, I think he would be an ideal pick for the Titans there. So you have that. And then you got the D-tackle position. Look, man, Sebastian Joseph was an outstanding signing. Let me not say outstanding. Was a solid signing, right? Because you're getting a veteran, a guy who has 38 career starts. Folks, before he was added, there were the total DT starts outside of Jeffrey Simmons was 15. T.K. McClendon Jr., Keandre Coburn, and Quentin Bohanna, between them, 15 total starts. That's doing Jeffrey Simmons a disjustice. But unfortunately, the DJ Reader, like that was a deal that they were working to get done. Reader ended up going to the Lions, and, you know, the rug got slipped out from under them. At 38, listen, man, you know, Jerzon Newton from Illinois, Tavondre Sweat, if he's there, that would be beautiful, putting him next to Jeffrey Simmons. There's options later, too. I believe they have McKinley from Texas A&M coming for a visit. You know, those are some other options there, but they're going to have to do something because that position cannot continue to be neglected. And Sebastian Joseph, it's a move that, going into this year, they'll be in decent shape. But who's going to make teams pay for double-team of Jeffrey Simmons? Who's going to sit in there and occupy two gaps? That's why Devondre Sweat is such a good option from a two-gap side of things. I tell you another guy, Michael Hall out of Ohio State. Look, he's not big. 295 pounds or so. But you talk about get off. You talk about motor. Look, man, you go back, JPJ, the center from Oregon, giving him all he wanted. Multiple times I saw him smoothly escort Jackson Powers Johnson back into the what would have been the quarterback. So you do have that as well. He's a guy. See, this is where not having that third round pick is going to hurt. I'll tell you another area where not having a third round pick is going to hurt, and that's at the cornerback position. We mentioned Awuzie. You know, obviously we'll get into the Legarius Sneed possibility later in the show with Matt Verderon. But you know, not having that third round pick, Cam Hart. That could be one. Now, there's another guy that I want to mention, Kalen Carson out of Wake Forest. I talked to Keon Coleman. Keon told me that was the best corner he faced. So I said, let me go back and watch some of this. Now, he did flash. You guys have heard me talk about Malik Mustafa multiple times, and he flashed in watching, you know, from a safety perspective, looking at Mustafa. But went back. I posted a few. There's a four-play sequence that I thought was really good. He's a feisty corner, 6'1", 190. He's a guy that's preferably a man corner. But that's somebody in the draft that could be there in the fourth round, right? Because, you know, you look at him, you look at Kyrie Jackson. We talked about him. One way or another, they have to add help at cornerback because outside of Chidobe, outside of Roger McCreary, look, man, there's a spot on one of the outside spots, and I don't know who's going to fill that. Trey Avery has, you know, done the best that he can, right? Eric Garrett is not an outside corner. Anthony Kendall, you know, it's more of a nickel as well, special teams guys. So they're going to need to add to that cornerback room. Me personally, sign a Keller Weatherspoon. Go ahead and reunite him with Awuzie from their Colorado days. And you know, that's an option. The safety position as well, run through that real quick. Obviously, Imani Hooker, Elijah Molden, like that's going to be your starting tandem for now. Kayvon Wallace ended up signing with Seattle, so you have that. But why not look within the division? You have a free agent by the name of Julian Blackman, who is an outstanding player, and I've said it before on talking with TD, Run TMC specifically, when the Colts would face the Titans. This is one of the few guys, a few DBs that came up, and when he made contact with Derrick Henry, oftentimes Henry was going down, right? He's out there, 3 interceptions last year. Go ahead and do it. He's 26 years old. Sign him. You have, you know, a young safety to pair with your guy, Imani Hooker, and to, you know, pair with Elijah Molden. Last nugget I'm going to leave you with is this. Denard Wilson, he stressed versatility. Marcus Banks, Mississippi State. I mentioned him on Twitter earlier this week. Marcus Banks has played both safety spots. You watch the South Carolina game. He dropped down. He lined up against the slot. Not when Xavier Leggett was in the slot now. We're not going to go that far. But he lined up against the slot, and he held his own there. He was also an outside corner at Alabama. So Marcus Banks, watch for him on day 3. Mississippi State's Pro Day is actually coming up on March 26th. So you'll see some good results from him. So That's about it for now. We're going to go ahead and go to a break. Let's get back and get further into this Calvin Ridley situation with Chris Sanders on Run TMC.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Who are we? Bring them on. Uh-oh. The music fades. And the lights dim. Ha, I know where we're going. And now, coming to you live from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Starting at power forward at 6'11", 240 pounds. From Hartford University, number 42, Vin Baker.
And now, starring with the Jackson 5, not Tito, but Jermaine Jackson.
Yo, slow down, Tito, damn.
Dude, let me tell you something. I think it was about maybe 8 years ago. He was in a Stapleton airport. And you know back in the day when you used to use Murray's grease?
Yeah.
On the slick back. Man, he had it on with the quickness.
He had half a can on.
No, the whole can was on there. Just...
Yeah, that Murray's grease used to be. It was thicker than Sporting Waves. I remember I used Sporting Waves, then I used Murray's grease, and I used Dax in the red. You remember in the red can?
Yes,
Man, I used to have those spinners now.
And I was a wrestler. I wrestled in high school, so I had a grease all on the mat. But then also, you couldn't wash it out. You had to get a hot comb or a air blower, a air dryer, and melt it out.
Let me find out you got pinned and when you finally got up. It was a big circle on the mat.
It was. And then the dude I was wrestling, his face, side of his face was greasy.
You had cats forfeiting, man. I don't want to go in there with him.
Man, that was back in the day when I thought I had waves. It's just a whole bunch of grease, man. Awful.
That's hilarious, man.
That's hilarious. Okay, well,
we haven't gotten to talk about it because it happened after our last conversation. But, man, a little excitement in the receiver room now. You got Calvin Ridley coming, and I will say this. That press conference he gave was A+. He is, you could feel his energy, and I love. Like, he has, and you know this because we've talked about it, and you know it because you have it as well. It's that alpha, aggressive, just A1 mentality, and you saw that in him. So, I mean, look, I've spoken about it. What's your feedback on? Let's start with the press conference itself.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I just kind of looked at him, and there's one word that comes to my mind. It means assertive.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I looked up the definition. Guess what assertive means? It means forceful personality. Forceful personality, and then it says this. It says behaving confidently. What did you see in the press conference? A powerful personality, forceful personality, and behaving confidently. Say, you know what? I'm the best receiver in the league. And as a receiver, you want to feel that, you know. And the thing about it is, this is what I love about Ridley, is because he didn't let his failures become his life. He said, you know what? I failed in life. I made some bad choices, but I have a love for the game. I'm excited about the game. I'm excited about a new chance. So sometimes when you have a setback, it's a setback for a setup for something great. That's why I love this cat.
Yeah, it set him up for something great. I mean, $50 million guaranteed. I mean, I thought it was funny, though, because when I asked him about how people would perceive him after he got the deal, they think that he's going to, not work as hard, this, that, and the third. And those comments, like, it always kills me because it's like, do you know this guy to say it? But I thought it was funny because he was like, I wasn't really gambling. And then you saw the wheels start turning. He was like, well, yeah, I was. I was cracking up when he said that.
But you know what? The thing about it is, before you can have real change, you just got to be real. I blew it.
Yeah.
He blew it. So what? But here's the great part about it is, that situation made him a better man. And the thing about it is, the one thing that I get so excited about is sometimes, you know, society, you know, puts people in a box after they make a mistake. So what? He made a mistake. The reason why yours ain't on Instagram and yours ain't on MySpace and all that stuff is because nobody's talking about you.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing about it is, he's in a limelight, so that's not your duty to put your judgment on a guy that made a mistake. Yeah, he made a mistake. He was a young kid when he did it. So even though that situation happened, it made him a better man, and also it gave him appreciation for the game.
Yeah, it really did, and that's why I asked him about, you know, what did he miss the most, you know, and those are always questions I like guys that love football to expand upon. But now that he's back, okay, so it was, you know, a year and three quarters, so to speak, that he was gone. He came back, and he mentioned how significant it was to come back last year, 1,000 yards, eight touchdowns, you know, 76 catches. When you're away from the game for that long and then to come back with that impact, I mean, is that something that you feel is a remarkable accomplishment for him?
1,000%. Because the thing about it is, you got a choice to get bitter or get better. You can blame everybody else. You can say, woe is me. But the one thing that he did that makes the story so remarkable is, you know, he looked at the situation and he overcame the situation, and now he's doing a great job. I'm going to give you a perfect example. In 1992, and I'm not bragging on myself, I broke Jesse Owens' long jump record. And when I broke Jesse Owens' long jump record, I did a study on Jesse Owens. And I studied on how he went through tribulations. He was in the 1936 Olympics, and how everybody booed him to where, you know, Hitler, you know, didn't even acknowledge him.
Mm-hmm.
But check this out. He broke four gold. He had four gold medals, and the same people, check this out, the same people that laughed at him and didn't want to talk to him had to stand up and give him a standing ovation.
How about that?
The reason why I'm saying in that story is, all the people that talked about Kevin Ridley, they said, oh, he's this and he's that, he's a bad guy. Now they got to stand up and give him a standing ovation.
Yeah, I mean, because he got himself back in shape to
1,000
win a huge contract. You know what I mean? And I think that's something to be proud of. He's already at work now. He mentioned how he had worked out with DeAndre Hopkins before. He's working out now with Zay Flowers, and there's a couple other guys that he's working out with. But Calvin Ridley, the receiver, from your eyes, having done it before, what are the Titans getting?
Man, let me tell you what he's getting. They're getting a guy that's a polished route runner. But I don't even want to start the routes. I want to talk about the line of scrimmage. You know, I did I watched a thing on Jerry Rice, and he said this. He said, well, you're at the line of scrimmage, you got to have a game plan. You got to know what you're doing, how to get off on releases. And I think what makes Calvin really, really so special is what he does at the line of scrimmage. He's physical at the line of scrimmage. He's confident. He bursts off the cut, and he does everything physical at the line of scrimmage. And just like when Jerry Rice talked about having a game plan, you watch what Calvin really does. He understands where he needs to be. He understands what he needs to do at the line of scrimmage. And at the top of the route, when I tell you this joke is explosive, get up out of them cuts, just get up out of there. Let's see. That's what I love about this cat.
Yeah, I watched. There was somebody posted he and LeJarius Sneed getting it on, man.
Oh, jeez.
I think it was week two. Uh-huh. And, man, those jokers were getting it on. And he made some catches. You know, you talk about late hands and being able get your feet down. He had a couple catches where I just was like, wow. What about the versatility? You know, because something I tried to mention, you know, how he could be moved across the formation, et cetera.
Sure.
And, you know, obviously, last year, and he said it didn't happen, so, you know, his PFF rating, for those of you who go by that as the, you know, New World's translation of Holy Scriptures, it wasn't high as far as the rating, as far as his versatility. But what have you seen from him?
You know, I just love what he does. I mean, when I say I love what he does, he can move around in different positions. This is what makes me mad. Everybody says, okay, this guy's a slot receiver. This guy's an out receiver. What the heck does that mean? Look at some of the big receivers in the league that are some of the best slot players. Jerry Rice played in the slot. Randy Moss played in the slot. T.O. played in the slot. Isaac Bruce played in the slot. It's not just about smaller guys being in the slot. It's able to start and stop and change directions. So what does Calvin Ridley do? He starts and stops.
That's what he does best.
That's what he does. So is he a slot receiver outside? No, he's a versatile player, like you just said. He can be on the outside, run a post, run a comeback, run the curls. Then he can get in the slot, run those choice routes, those squirrel routes, and those seam routes. Why? Because he can change directions. He can start and stop. He can make some big plays. That's what you want. When you talk about a guy being versatile, and I'm going to give an example, and the guy that we love outstandingly is Leggett from South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Versatile player. Mm-hmm. He can play in 11 personnel. He can play the X, he can play the H, or he can play the Z. Why? Because you can do things on the outside, but also you can do things in the slot to run those choice routes.
So that's a great point. So many people funnel in the Kyle Phillips types and say, hey, that's what a slot receiver is. But, I mean, look, Marcus Colston made a living as a power slot. You know, you have that. But I differentiate the two, right, just real quick. The slot and the outside receiver, like how the roles differ or what it is that you have to do.
Yeah, but see, the thing is when you're on the outside, I mean, you got to look at the safety, you got to look at the corner. I mean, those are the guys that you got to really pay attention to. And as an outside receiver, you got to look at the body language of the safety. If he's moving around, that means he's got to get somewhere. And then all of a sudden they go into a cover three and he backs up. You got to adjust to that. So you got to understand that. Now, when you get into the slot, now you're dealing with safeties. Now you're dealing with linebackers that don't have the quick twitch muscles as an outside guy. So that's kind of the difference. I don't think there's no difference outside because you can run a dig from the inside, from the number two receiver, and you can run a dig from the outside. So it's just understanding where your leverage is. If the corner, not the corner, if the linebacker shading inside, I understand where I got to go, if I got to run a chase route. So it's kind of the things like that makes the difference between the inside and the outside.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Where does this leave the Titans receiver room? How does it impact their group?
I think it's good because you see the guys that they still have. They got Treshawn Harrison. He's there. Hopkins is there. Jackson Kadarius, remember him? He's still there. You got Kaysen, Kenzie. You got NWI. So you get another guy. You sneak up and get Leggett. I'm telling you, you got a receiver room that's flat out nasty. Just like 1999, we had some dudes. We had myself. We had Derek Mason. We had Isaac Byrd. We had what's that guy at Pittsburgh? I just lost track of his name.
Yancey Thigpen.
So we have some dudes. Yep. And it's just that you have a whole bunch of guys. It's just understand where you got to put the guys. And I think, you know, Tyke Tolbert is going to have a great, great job by putting these guys in position.
What did that do for your group? You know, so many guys competing and pushing each other. What did that do?
Man, it made everybody better because if you don't compete, you're not going to get on the field. And I remember 1998 and the 2 years before that. My rookie season, I made the all-rookie team. The next season, I had a pretty good season. The third season, I kind of struggled a little bit. So they brought two guys, and they brought Kevin Dyson, they brought Yancey Thigpen. So now I'm on the outside looking in. So now every practice, it made me play so well that they had to play me. That's what it brought out of me. So I had a choice to sit there and say, woe is me. They drafting, you know, different receivers, and they talked about me bad on the draft, and what am I going to do? It brought the best out of me. It got so crazy that in preseason, and you only played four preseason games at the time, I had 5 or 6 touchdowns in preseason that quick. That's how hard I was playing.
Mm, so you were getting it in.
Getting it in. What? Scoring like left and right. I mean, I scored a couple against the Rams and two against the Philadelphia Eagles. I was balling, man, because here's the deal. It makes you better. It's a lot of times people don't want to accept the challenge. They want to be like, they did this to me, and then, you know, all this. No, man, just buckle up, line up, and say, I dare you to stop me. That's the kind of catch you get with Kevin Ridley. I dare you to stop me.
So that being said, you look at, you know, the different defenses the Titans are going to play. Obviously, mm-hmm. There's an abundance of, you know, top level corners in the league. How do you think he fares against those top corners? And what is it that you think will give him, you know, the ability to win at times?
Oh, well, Kevin Ridley?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, man, it's going to make him better. I mean, the thing about it is, I remember when I got drafted in 1995, that secondary, Chris Dishman, Marcus Robinson, Blaine Bishop, Steve Jackson, they crazy. Them is a catch you want to fight in practice. And when you're beating them in practice, you're beating them in one-on-one, you're beating them in 7-on-7, and then you start to get, you know, go against different corners in the league, I'm like, man, if I can beat these guys in practice, I can beat these guys on the field. That's the same thing with Calvin Ridley. We already know Calvin Ridley's a dog, and a lot of corners can't cover him. But when you're going against the corners with the Tennessee Titans, you're beating those guys, then now I know you can go into other teams and beat them also.
So you feel this team is legitimately set up to go against most defenses, at least from a pass catching standpoint?
I mean, but look who they got right now. They got Hop, they got Calvin Ridley, they got Chig. I mean, they got Burks if he comes along. This is a team that can maybe push the ball down the field, because when you talk about, we said it earlier, about a slot receiver, who can play in the slot? Hop. Who can play on the outside? Burks. Mm-hmm. Who can play on the other perimeter in the boundary? Calvin Ridley. So you got so many guys with so much talent that are explosive that can make plays.
How should Treylon Burks take this move?
So can I be honest?
Yeah.
Number one, two things. Number one, he's got to embrace it. But okay, here's the challenge. But I will be a pissed receiver. And when I say I'll be a pissed receiver, not in pissed because they drafted him, but I'm going to play so well and I'm going to be so consistent that they say, okay, you know what? Even though we got Calvin Ridley, even though we got Hop, we got to make sure and figure out ways to get him the ball. That's how you handle it.
I love that. I definitely agree. I'm looking forward to talking to Treylon this upcoming mini camp and everything. Hopefully he comes back. Yeah, he's working. Actually, Rand Carthon at the combine said that he and DeAndre Hopkins were training together. So that's a great thing right there.
Yeah, but, you know, can I just elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah.
I don't think it's an athletic thing. Everybody's focused, oh, he can't do this. I'm telling you something. If he gets a little bit of confidence, when I say confidence, I'm not saying confidence, oh, he's soft. Please, that's not what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Confidence in understanding running routes, understanding what to do with the line of scrimmage, understanding how to take the top off the defense, understanding how to burst off the cut, and do that with assertiveness, then now you went from being an okay player to being in the mention with Calvin Ridley. That's what I'm talking about.
So many people overlook. You get to this league, and that's why, you know, again, I say it over and over again, but you'll never hear me say so-and-so sucks or so-and-so is trash, because
that's
everybody – that puts on a helmet with an NFL team logo on
absolutely
is the truth. You know
it
what I'm
is
saying?
It
but
is the truth.
A lot of times what separates it is the mental part of it. And that is something that just goes so overlooked.
It is. The mental part is huge because, you know, if you look at Jerry Rice, when he first got in the league, he dropped a lot of balls.
They called him Fifi because of that hair.
But he was dropping a lot of balls. But the reason why he was dropping a lot of balls is because his confidence was shot. But once he got that confidence, he became the best receiver to ever put on a helmet.
Yeah, no doubt about
it. Jeez.
Well, I tell you what, man. I was watching old highlights, right? And it's crazy because I was watching highlights, and it was a relay. It was a track meet.
And
this dude got the baton, and they were, and it was a 4x1. He got the baton, and they were behind.
Carl Lewis.
That's what my daughter thought it was. You know, they were behind the other team. They were in second place. But the dude got the baton, and he was able to run by, and he eventually passed the anchor leg, the guy who was anchoring. And he looked back at him. And my daughter, she was like, why did Carl Lewis do that? I said, no, that wasn't Carl Lewis. That was Chris Sanders.
But guess what?
You know you did that, right?
Hey, but guess what? I was watching the 1989 Olympics.
Uh-oh.
My wife was like, babe, we got to watch some track because you was good in track. I'm like, thank you, baby. Give me a kiss on the cheek. So I'm watching this guy do hurdles. And this guy's doing hurdles. And she was like, baby, I did not know TD was that old. I said, baby, that's not TD. That's Edwin Moses.
Monty Hooker, and I'm talking with TD.
Back from the break, talking with TD. Hey, man, we got that extensive Rolodex, so we had to go ahead and dial it up. We're going to bring in a guy, and it's always dope to see somebody rise through the process, and this next guest is someone that I've personally witnessed do that, and he's now with Sports Illustrated, and that's Matt Verderam. Matt, what's going on, man?
What's going on, TD? How are you?
I'm doing well, man. Just trying to work through this introduction. Boy, I tell you what, it gets a little tongue-tied sometimes, but we made it. I want to get into this whole issue with L'Jarius Sneed, and you're one of the folks who are pretty well tuned in the Kansas City area, so let's look at where things are at this point. Like, what's the latest that you've heard?
So over the weekend, I got a call from a source on this, close to the situation, who said essentially, look, the problem is not what the Chiefs are asking for in terms of compensation back. It's the fact that LeJarius Sneed wants to be the highest paid corner in NFL history on a per year basis, which is $22 million a year. And no team's willing to go there. You know, prior to free agency, you know, once he was tagged, it was out there that he could get traded, that the Chiefs were open for business. I understand that, the Lions and the Falcons were really heavy in on him before free agency started and right at the outset of free agency. Lions moved off of him, traded for Carlton Davis. Falcons obviously went and spent a lot of money elsewhere in free agency. And then I was also told, like, he was basically in possession of a $20 million per year offer and just wouldn't sign it. And so now, look, I was told on Saturday the Colts and the Titans were the two teams most in on him, and then on Monday was told that as of now the Colts are out. The price is prohibitive. Now, you and I both know teams circle back sometimes.
Yeah.
Things can change, but that's the information that I have right now.
Okay, so what you've gotten is that the price tag that Sneed wants contract-wise is too high. That's interesting because I've gotten that the compensation the Chiefs want is too high for what the Titans want to do to acquire Sneed. So you got both sides. Like, it's really interesting how that's working. Now, as you said, teams could always circle back. That value can drop. One of the things that you said that was really interesting to me, and I didn't even realize this, and I would like for you to go into detail here. You talked about the knee and how there were concerns in training camp. Can you elaborate to the Titans listeners here?
Yeah, sure. So look, Sneed is 27 years old, and he's always kind of dealt with some knee issues. He's had a couple of cleanups in the past, nothing major. But in training camp last year, he missed all of training camp. He didn't practice. If memory serves me right, I don't think he practiced once before the season started. He sat the whole summer out. And he, to his credit, he played all the games. He didn't play week 18 because they sat their starters, but he was healthy enough to play it. He played all the games, played all the playoff games, was great, but was also at times in practice was limited with a knee injury throughout the season. And so I think there is some concern in league circles. Like, is that knee good now? Is that a knee that's going to be problematic going forward? I would imagine any team that signs him is going to want to take a look at his knees before it all gets going. And I think that might be one of the factors why the Chiefs haven't extended him. Now, part of that is they also have some very good young corners like Trent McDuffie, and they've got other guys to pay. I think that's probably the biggest factor. But, you know, my understanding is, yeah, the medical is at least a factor here, if nothing else. And I think every team's going to have to get comfortable with it, especially if you're talking about paying a guy $20-plus million a year.
So, based on that, is it safe to say that the Chiefs are aggressively looking to move off of Sneed?
The Chiefs, to my understanding, and what I've been told, is that the Chiefs are fine going forward on the franchise tag with him.
Okay.
They don't have any problem doing that, but they're not going to extend him. Like, if he's in Kansas City, this is it. And then he'll hit free agency next year. Which is why all of this is bizarre in the sense, if you're LeJarius Sneed, you know this. Why wouldn't you take $20 million elsewhere per year, maybe get, you know, 50-some-odd million guaranteed? Like, and I think, look, like most contracts that are significant, the third-year guarantee always matters.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of this, too. Like, can you get a third-year guaranteed, or is it just going to be the first 2 years and then basically two-year or two-team options? And I think with Tennessee specifically, one of the problems is they don't have a third-round pick this year.
Yep.
And I think with most teams, that's the value. So it's kind of like if Tennessee does it, I almost wonder if it's going to have to be like Tennessee's second, but then the Chiefs give back some picks to like make it a third round value. Like, is it almost like they swap seconds or something like that, and then Tennessee throws in a later round pick? I think that's part of the problem, because to my understanding, a lot of these teams, nobody's offered a second round pick. It's been thirds, but Tennessee doesn't have a third. So you kind of have to find a middle ground there.
Yeah, that's a great point. We're talking to Matt Verderam of Sports Illustrated. He also has his own podcast there. It's called the Matt Verderam Podcast. Make sure you check it out. It's Chiefs focused, but you will get a lot of NFL information on there as well, as Matt is an insider across the league. So going along those lines, now I didn't get this from any Titan source or anything like that. It's something I saw out there in the rumorverse, so to speak. A 2025 third round pick in exchange for Snead. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's hard for one reason. If you're the Chiefs, you're going for a three-peat right now. Mm-hmm. And you had arguably the best defense in the NFL last year, and Snead and McDuffie on the corners were a huge part of that because of how versatile they are and how great players they are. If you're the Chiefs, if that's the best offer, wouldn't you just leave him on the tag and then just take the comp pick next year?
Right.
I mean, that's the problem. Now, granted, I think sometimes compensatory picks, people don't fully understand how that works. I think we've done a terrible job in selling that and getting people to understand it. Because people just think, anybody who leaves, it's automatically a third-round pick. That's not how this works. If the Chiefs let Snead walk, they might originally get, a third-rounder. But then if they go sign somebody who's really good, then it cancels. So I would think a 2025 third, I think at that point the Chiefs would just hold on to him. I think they would just play it out. I don't know that for a fact. I haven't asked anybody in the building that. I was just knowing the way they operate, I don't think that would be enough for them to move off of Snead. I think they would just play out the $19.8 million tag because they can. They're under the cap. They've got some other mechanisms they have at their disposal. They could extend Justin Reed and save a bunch of money there. So they're not financially tight. If they want to keep him on the tag, they can easily do it. I think to move off of him, they're going to have to get at least a day two pick. The problem is none of this matters if Snead doesn't lower his price.
Yeah.
Because nobody's paying him 4 years and $88 million. It's just not happening. So that's kind of the limbo we're in right now.
Well, do you see him lowering his price? Who are his agents, by the way? I haven't looked that up.
His agent is Safara Lawson, who also represents Joe Mixon.
Okay.
My understanding is really that I don't know if this is so much agent-driven as it is player-driven. This is more he is sitting there saying, I'm the best corner of football. I want to be paid like it. And look, hey, man, I'm always get as much money as you can.
Yeah.
You have a finite career. But at the same point, he can't get 22 a year. That's just not going to – and you know as well as I do, once you get into free agency and that money starts going away, it goes away fast.
Yeah.
It dries up. And I just think once Jalen Johnson signed in Chicago for 4 years and $76 million, so $19 a year, that was it. Snead's not getting $3 million more a year than Jalen Johnson. Jalen Johnson's 2 years younger, and he's an all-pro. So, I think Snead last year, I watched every snap of him. I thought you could make a real case. He was the best corner in the league last year. That being said, you could also make the case with a straight face. He wasn't the best corner on his own team. Huh. McDuffie was first-team all-pro last year, and he deserved to be. So, it's just a tough spot, man. But I hope for the kid's sake, I hope he gets paid. It takes if that $20 million a year is still out there for him, I hope he takes it because he's not getting it from Kansas City on a long-term deal.
Well, Matt, you've watched his snaps. Make a case for him to say, hey, look, I am the best corner. I believe this. If you don't say that you're the best, then you're selling yourself short. So for him to say that, I get it. But for you as someone who's watched so much of him, what is the case that he has to stake that he is the best?
TD, I'll be honest with you. I really thought, I've always thought he was a good player his first 3 years in Kansas City. He's good. He's versatile. For people unaware, he's really good in the slot. You can put him outside. He's really good outside. He's a great blitzer. He's a great tackler. He had over 100 tackles a year ago.
Yeah.
He's a great player. He's physical. He's got length. He can do everything you want. He can play man. He can play zone. What I think was most impressive last year is they had him travel with number one receivers. And if you look at their schedule last season, you name a great receiver in the league, you probably played him. Mm-hmm. Saw Tyreek Hill twice, Justin Jefferson, Diggs twice, Keenan Allen twice. On down the line, Amon-Ra St. Brown. The only guy who had 100 yards against him was Christian Kirk all year long. Mm. And he did not give up a touchdown pass in the regular season. He was dominant. They put him one-on-one with no help on Tyreek Hill. And in both games, Tyreek Hill had 62 yards receiving. So he's big time, which is why the Chiefs are willing to give him the 19.8 this year. They just look at it like, we'll take you for one more year and put you out there with McDuffie and Justin Reed and the rest of that defense. So if he doesn't lower the price, and we get, I think the draft is kind of the deadline here. If they get by the draft, then I think the Chiefs are just going to say, you know, we're just going to keep him.
Do you see a move on draft day? Do you think that could be?
It's possible. I mean, I think the problem is once you get past the draft, then it becomes, okay, you got to wait a whole year for the pick. And then, So what is really the difference between that and the compensatory, you know? I don't know that it would be that big because the Chiefs, the way they're set up, I don't know if they're going to be crazy aggressive next year for agency. They got a lot of their own guys to extend, like Creed Humphrey and Nick Bolton. And then, you know, look, let's just talk about the Titans for a second. Like, they signed Chidobe Awuzie, and you would know better than me, but, like, is Christian Fulton a candidate to come back, or is he fully out the door?
He's in L.A. as we speak, and he's probably going to sign that deal this weekend with the Chargers.
Because, like, I saw he was making the visit. So if he's gone, you know, okay, and Awuzie comes in, and, you know, you could certainly make a case the Titans still need a corner. You can make a case the Colts still need one, even though they brought back Kenny Moore. Like, the need is there. The problem is just if he doesn't lower that asking price by a decent amount, I just don't think anybody's going to get near it. I don't think he's getting over $20 million a year.
Yeah. Well, the good thing for the Titans and for him is that's one team who still has plenty of cash to pull from. They're second in the league, I think, in like $54 million in cap space. So we'll see what happens there. The Matt Verderam podcast. You had a power rankings. I'm going to give you a chance. You know, you're either going to make the Titans fans love you or make them hate you. Unfortunately, there's no in between. Where did you have them ranked?
They're going to hate me because I did the AFC power rankings. I just did the AFC. I had them 14th for one reason. I don't know what the heck to make of Will Levis.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't dislike him. Like, I actually was impressed by him at times. The problem really is if you took Tennessee and put him in the NFC, I might pick him to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
But like in the AFC, I'm a big believer in like, who's your quarterback? Well, in the AFC, you got what, 9, 10 guys who you look at and you're like, that guy's really good. Mm-hmm. And it's tough. But I will say this. I know Tennessee fans will hear like a 14th. The reality is though, when I was doing the power rankings, I thought the teams between 8 and 14 I thought you could mix them up and pull out a name, and I wouldn't argue with you. I mean, I think they're in that group with like Pittsburgh and Cleveland and Indianapolis, and you know, and maybe, you know, the Jets, depending on what you think of Rodgers coming back this year. Like, I could see Tennessee, and I actually said this on the podcast. I could see Tennessee being a team where Levis plays well, Callahan's a great hire, and they make the playoffs. And I could also see a year where, you know, Levis just doesn't really progress and Callahan's getting his feet wet and it's tough. But they're a wild card in the AFC. They're an interesting team. I'm curious. And I do like the upgrades they made. I thought Carthon did a nice job bringing in some speed on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, yeah. Two more questions. One, if they were to acquire Snead, does that put them from 14 to 10 or 8 or how does that work for you?
It would move him up because, to me, again, if you have him and Awuzie, now you got two corners who you can really put out there on islands and go, okay.
Yeah.
Like, I feel pretty, especially Snead, but Awuzie as well, a couple of years removed from the torn ACL. Like, I will say this. I think the AFC South is an interesting division because in the other divisions, I know the Bills have lost some guys. The Bills are still the best team in that division. The Chiefs are miles better than anybody in the AFC West.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the North you look at, and you can make an argument, you know, Baltimore, Cincinnati. The South, like, I get it, and I'm a big Houston guy. They look terrific. But, you know, they still got to answer some questions. I mean, they still have got to be able to put this thing together. Jacksonville last year was a mess at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And I don't know what Anthony Richardson is. You know, I'm kind of in the same boat. Anthony Richardson, Will Levis, like, I don't know. They could be great. They could struggle. I'm curious to see how it all works out, but I do think there's upside in that division. And I will say, I really like the Callahan hire. I think he's going to be a good coach. I think everybody you talk to in the league is really enthused about him.
No doubt about it. So the last question, we're going to end it on this note. You watch the draft. You follow these prospects. If the Titans sit at pick number 7 and Drake May is standing there staring at him, and you're the GM, would you select him?
Dude, if Drake May's sitting there at 7, I would take him in a heartbeat unless some team offers me just such a haul that I'm like, all right, I got it. I have to trade out of this. But I'd take him. I think a normal board, I probably am just taking an offensive lineman. I don't know where you sit on this. We haven't talked about this. Like, part of the Titans, I might just take a tackle because the tackle class is loaded.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong investing in the front. But, yeah, man, if Drake May sitting there at 7, I'll probably turn that card in pretty fast.
Okay, got it. I was curious. Me personally, I'm taking the offensive lineman and rolling the dice with Levis. But, hey, I mean, look, everybody has their own decisions to make. And fortunately, neither one of us are going to face that. But
it's
one thing,
call.
Yeah, exactly. But one thing that is your call is your Matt Verderame podcast. Folks, make sure you check that out and definitely keep up with Matt. As this LeJarius Sneed news continues to come, he's one of those folks that's definitely in the know. So, Matt, we appreciate you. Definitely read as much as we can on you from SI Now.
Hey, thanks a lot, Teron. Appreciate it. Take care.
For sure. So that was Matt Verderame right there. Always good to reunite with some guys. You know, I connected with him a long time ago, man, and saw him rise through. Really good information there as far as LeJarius Sneed is concerned. Appreciate him for coming on. Appreciate Chris Sanders, Run TMC. Always love the insight of a guy who's been in the shoes, right? Been there and done that. So that's a plus that you get when you tune into this podcast, folks. So I'm definitely glad to bring that to you. We got David James. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. This is a great show. Good opportunity, like I said, to talk shop, man. I love it. We'll continue to do it each and every week. We won't stop recording. You already know this. Definitely continue to stay tuned. You can check us out on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, wherever you get your fine listening materials. Search Talking with TD. Subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you.